Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, for seniors in South Florida and across the country, this time of year can be really stressful. Deadlines are looming for college applications, especially for those students applying for early decision and early action. Now, over the past several years, the college admission application process has changed drastically. Among these changes are digitized applications, greater competition, and schools adopting a more holistic approach to their admissions process. Now, we've heard your questions and concerns about all things college, and we're dedicating a long conversation today to these college-bound students or those starting to think about the process. We're joined now by Coral Reef High School CAP Advisor Lou Gilman. Lou, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. I appreciate it. Also, Dr. Octavio Ramos. He's president of Dr. O. Ramos and Associates Tutoring and College Prep Services. Dr. Ramos, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you. And also joining us is Dave Marcus. He's the author of the book, Acceptance, A Legendary Counselor Helps Seven Kids Find the Right Colleges and Find Themselves. Dave is joining us from NPR Studios in New York, and he's going to be in Miami at the Temple Studios of Israel on November 14th for a discussion about the college admission process. Dave, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And again, we welcome all of you, and we want to hear from you. We want your questions, your concerns. If you're going through this process right now, what's it been like for you and for your student, for your kid who's thinking about going to school, where they're going to go? You can send us your questions a number of ways. Tweet us at WLRN Sundial. Post on Facebook at WLRN Sundial. You can also email us your question, sundial at WLRNnews.org. Better yet, give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. We want your questions. What about the application process, financial aid? I'd love to hear from you if you're going through, you know, a lot of stress right now. How are you handling the stress? Maybe our panel can help you find the answers. All right. I want to start this question with all three of you, and I wanted to know, applying and getting into college now, is it the most difficult and the most complicated that it's ever been? I've been thinking about this. I went through this process back in the 90s, the late 80s, early 90s, and it seems like it has changed a lot. But Dr. O, let me start with you. I mean, harder than it's ever been? Is this the toughest it's ever been?
Well, it's the most complicated it's ever been.
Okay.
But by the same token, you have a heck of a lot more resources than we had. I mean, you talk about when you applied in the 90s, I applied in the 70s.
All right, okay. It's not a competition, but it's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, without a doubt, the complexities are there. The schools are asking for a little bit more and a little bit more, and the process has become complicated. By the same token, you have the internet, you have resources, you have agencies like mine, you have full-time counselors like Lou. And so even though it's more complicated, there's more
that you have to do, but there's more opportunity and help.
And more support. There are more scholarships available.
Okay.
Et cetera.
Well, Lou Gilman, I mean, and we're going to talk about what a CAP advisor is here in just a moment. But yeah, your take on it. I mean, like right now, you know, he says it's more complicated, but does that mean that it's tougher for students to get into schools?
In many, the competition has gotten a lot stiffer. Kids have to definitely prepare for it. At the same token, all of these schools, I had Brown University and Brandeis at my school today, and they're really looking for a very well-rounded, passionate, involved, excited student, and it's a qualitative and quantitative thing. And whereas, yeah, the numbers and certain things are getting harder and stiffer, they are definitely more excited about bringing kids who want to make change onto their campuses.
Yeah, you know what, Dave Marcus, we talk about this process being more complicated, but the other thing too is that, I mean, look, I remember, you know, always being told you want a better chance at a better life, you got to go to college, but it's more competitive. And I mean, the landscape has changed, right? I mean, what's different today?
Lewis, it has changed, but I want to be reassuring amid all this, the hype that goes on this time of year. Yes, there are more kids applying to some of the so-called top colleges. But remember, you talked about the 70s and the 90s. generally, years ago, kids applied to 4, 5, maybe 6 colleges. Now, I've written a lot about this process. I've observed this process. I've been a volunteer. I've been an alum interviewer for Brown University. And I can tell you, especially, unfortunately, here in New York and in D.C. and in L.A. and sometimes in South Florida, kids are applying to 20, 30 colleges.
Absolutely.
And that skews all the numbers. So we have to be really careful.
20 or 30?
Absolutely.
Yeah, literally. I spoke in Houston a few years ago, and a kid had just applied to 31 colleges. Now, that's ridiculous. You're only going to go to one, I would assume. So that makes it seem like everything's more competitive. And frankly, the college is like that. It's a business for them. The more people they can turn down, the more kind of elite they look like. But there's 3,000 colleges in this country, and most of them are not that competitive. And there are a lot of good ones, too.
Absolutely. Tons of great opportunity out there that are not on what they call the upper tier or upper echelon that have some amazing programs that these kids can be successful at.
Again, the number is 800-743-9576. If you're going through this process, or even if you're not, if your kid is in their sophomore, junior year, you need to be thinking about this way ahead of time. You shouldn't be waiting, because the deadline's coming up in November. You should not be waiting for now to get into this process. So we'd love to hear your questions. And, you know, our panel here might be able to help you out. And anything, applying, what schools to apply to, if you're applying to 30, you know, financial aid and so forth. We want to get to all these things as if possible today. Lou, real quickly, you're a CAP advisor at Coral Reef Senior High School. I think I can safely say that didn't exist when I was coming up in school.
Yeah.
What's a CAP advisor? What do you do?
The College Assistance Program, that is a service in all Miami-Dade County public schools, either a standalone CAP advisor such as myself or a counselor, someone trained in the program, is put in the school to solely serve the students and their parents and the community in a lot of ways and times with the entire college application process. Everything from working with our sophomores and juniors. I do have workshops with my freshmen, but they're still a little young. But from sophomore, junior year, prepping them with the language, the tools, the resources, as Octavio was saying, that are out there that they can start taking advantage of.
And what point in a student's career should they be meeting with you?
They come and see me as freshmen want to. I start doing...
At freshmen, you're already telling them about how to get ready for...
If they're interested and they want to come and see me, I'm in a school of over 3,300. So, you know, I do try to see as many of them as I can. But actually, formal presentations where I go in with a plan for them is sophomore year.
And Dave, you think that they eighth graders should be going on college tours?
Yes, but let's be careful about it. Let's not take that out of context and make it false news, fake news. So I do think it's a great thing for parents of kids who are getting near the high school age to take them to college campuses, but only because, and this is especially for kids who are not especially motivated, because let's face it, a lot of high schools kind of rote learning and so forth. And if you can see a college campus, not a particular one, not a Princeton, not a Berkeley, but just college campuses, it can really seem like after 4 years of high school kind of eating broccoli, that there's this amazing smorgasbord waiting for you. And so I really find that sometimes just showing kids colleges, all the great things on colleges, inspires them. But you're not talking about a brand. You're not talking about applications. You're not talking about statistics. You're just saying, this is kind of thing you could think about afterwards. And we can also talk about the fact that I'm a big believer in vocational ed and everything else, too. It doesn't have to be college, let's face it.
Yeah, there are a lot of different options. That's something that I hope we mention a couple of times here. I want to go to the phones. I want to go to Daniel in Palm Beach Gardens with a question for us today. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. Listen, I got a daughter who's a senior in high school. She's got a higher than a 4.0 average, and she wants to take a gap year off. So she's going to kind of plan out her career. She doesn't really know where she wants to go to college. She wants to focus on her SAT next year, maybe her SAT. What do you guys think of that? Is this a good idea not to go with the herd and hold off your application? Are you better off maybe applying mid-year, the following year? What are your thoughts on
that? Well, Dave, don't
Luis,
go,
can
Dave,
I?
Yeah, Daniel,
can
don't
I jump
go
in,
anywhere.
Luis?
Dave, go ahead.
Yep. Actually, you mentioned where I'm speaking. That's a big thing about what I'm speaking on November 14th, Wednesday. And it's going to, by the way, it's Temple Israel downtown, Temple of Israel of Greater Miami. We're going to talk about that. I'm a huge advocate of gap years. That's not to sit on your parents' couch and eat, you know, eat Cheese Whiz and stuff like that. But it's if you're volunteering, if you're working, if you're a waiter, waitress, if you're studying at community college, that's a great thing. If you talk to college presidents, candidly, they'll tell you that many 18-year-olds really are not mature enough to be on campuses, and a gap year can season them. A lot of countries, from Israel to Australia, have a mandatory sort of 13th year. You do service, or you go in the army, or you travel. It's a fantastic idea. I can't tell you how important it is, and how when you talk to gappers, and they go to college, they have a much better graduation, 4-year graduation rate than everybody else.
Thank you.
Daniel, thank you so much for that. I wanted to hear, Octavio, I want to hear from both of you on this, actually. What do you tell a parent, especially? Because maybe the student's like, yeah, I got it. I want to take a year off. How do you explain that to mom and dad?
Dave is spot on. Gap years can be used to enhance the acceptability of a candidate, if you're looking at it that way. Just make it meaningful and understand that whatever you do during your gap year, you're going to have to be accountable. You're going to have to explain to wherever you're applying what you did. Now, if you do something meaningful, you know, and if you join the Peace Corps, if you join the military, if you do, you know, the reserves or anything that you could articulate as being an enhancement to your, you know, your essence.
What about this, though? What if it's realistically you have to work? Because, well, college, you got to pay for it. Yeah. And so you got to work. I mean, is that...
Well, that's work experience.
Okay.
You can articulate that into something positive.
I got you. Okay. Daniel, thank you again for the call. Appreciate it. And good luck to your daughter. 4.0. Wow. Oh, I wish I was going into college with that. I wasn't one of those kids. Again, we're going to take some more calls here in a little bit. 800-743-9576. Tell us again if you're in that process. And again, if your kid is young, freshman, sophomore, but what should they be doing over the next few years getting ready for this opportunity when they start thinking about applying for colleges? You know what? I wanted to jump into this issue about, because there's so many things to cover, financial aid. But you know what, Octavio, let me start with you. Around this time, what are students talking about? What do you tend to hear from students as they're applying to schools? What's the typical, you know, conversation?
Well, it's still kind of early. They're still worried about the test, which are
SAT tests?
The SATs,
okay.
the test. Right. You know, there's several pillars to the college application process. You have the test, you have your GPA, you have your extracurricular activities, and then you have the letters. Whether it be a letter of recommendation from a teacher or someone that has observed you do something meaningful, or your own introductory letter. And so right now what you're seeing is the sort of pooling of the application process, gathering of these elements to present to the respective colleges.
So, I mean, you know, I hear a second ago that there was a student who had applied to 31 different schools. You know, but the application process, as you're pointing out, is very different. It's not that I'm actually filling out this application for 31 different schools. Now it's all consolidated, and it can go out to as many schools as I want it to go.
Well, you can take both ways. You can do, there's very standardized software where, you know, these particular items are uploaded, and they get purposely sent to different schools that you choose.
Yeah, you decide to. Okay.
But, you know, there's also a more direct way. Let's say if your heart is set on one particular school, you can do it one-on-one with them, and that speaks a little more of a commitment.
And Lou, can you explain the difference between Common App and Coalition Application? This is part of that, explaining how this all works when you're applying to different schools.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of those are what I call to explain to my kids are application platforms. It's one site that the student can go to and submit their application to a number of schools. And it's most likely the reason why many of them are applying to 30, 12, and 19 schools. The Common Application serves a little over, I think it's up to now 800 different colleges and universities throughout the country. And Coalition, I think, is up to a little over 100 now. And it is to create access and affordability. They have both application platforms has a part there that students who cannot pay application fees or whatnot can have those waived to
and
make
do,
it
do
easier.
Do most Florida universities and colleges accept either one of these?
No. Coalition, the University of Florida and Florida State are on them. Actually, University of Florida is a Coalition exclusive. The only way you can apply to the University of Florida is via Coalition application. And FSU jumped on there, made it a little easier. FSU is also on Common App. FSU actually has three different ways you can apply: Coalition, Common, or their very own website.
So it allows you, again, to just apply to a lot of different schools without having to send independent.
And that's one of the reasons I do try to talk to the kids a little bit earlier, because if they do wait till the very beginning of their senior year to just find out how to apply to these schools, what websites, it can become overwhelming because it is a lot of information. So if they're familiar, it gets easier.
We're talking about the college application process because the deadline is coming up here in November for seniors. I'm talking again with Coral Reef High School CAP advisor Lou Gilman. We're also talking with Dr. Octavio Ramos, president of Dr. O. Ramos and Associates Tutoring and College Prep Services. And also joining us is Dave Marcus. He's the author of Acceptance, A Legendary Counselor Help 7 Kids Find the Right Colleges and Find Themselves. He's joining us from the NPR studios in New York. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. We did collect some questions and comments online, but before we do that, I wanted to get to the phones because I had mentioned earlier financial aid. And of course, this is a big issue, you know, because you've got to find a way to pay for college. Let's go to the phones. I wanted to get to Andrea in Boca Raton. You got a question about financial aid, Andrea?
I do. I have a high school freshman, but I have two currently in college right now. And the FAFSA form is always quite fun to complete. My 21-year-old is independent. He pays his own way. He files his own taxes, gets no support for me. But apparently, unless he's 24 years old or meets some other very specific criteria, these students still have to use their parents' income when determining their financial aid. Is that truly the case, and is there some way I can assist him? Because otherwise, with my income, he won't get any scholarships at all.
All right. Who wants to tackle this one? All right, Lou, go ahead.
Yeah, and I have a son in college myself. But actually, my very first one is off to college, and I'm in the same boat, but you know, he's not quite 21 yet. But it is true. They do have to attain a certain age and other criteria to be determined independent and therefore not have to include parent income on that FAFSA. I wish it was different, but that is how it is. Now, he is certainly eligible and capable of applying for and exploring scholarships. What he won't perhaps be eligible for are the need-based grants because of your income. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of what you can do to help him, I mean, even at this age, you can't even, you know, put him up for adoption anymore because he's 21. So, yeah, I'm battling the same thing.
And real quickly, you said FAFSA, just remember.
FAFSA, which is the federal application. Yes, the free application for federal student aid.
All right.
It just doesn't make any sense because if you can do that once you're 24 years old, but hopefully these kids have graduated by the time they're 24 years old. And I don't understand what the thought process is behind the government to handle it this way.
I would never hope to understand the thought process of the government either. The theory behind a lot, I mean, when I explain it to my students, graduate students, I myself, if I were to go back and get, you know, a master's or a PhD, I would be filing the FAFSA as well, but that's that age gap that they have there for that. But you know, there's a certain understanding there of a level of obligation for the families to support through the college years with their students, I believe, is what their thinking is.
Andrea, thank you so much for the call. Best of luck, you know, as you're going through the process. Sounds like you're almost through with it, though. So, you know, you got two kids already up in college and one going in. So, you know what, Octavia, wanted to ask you about, I mean, scholarships. This also came up when I was going through school, maybe also as well as you, is trying to maneuver through all of these, all the financial aid that's out there, but also what scholarships are available. People may be surprised what they qualify for.
Well, there's a huge book that's published every year, and it has, I mean, it's about 5-6 inches thick, and it, I believe it's a U.S. News and World Report, and it is a breakdown of every conceivable scholarship that is out there, from very, very obvious to very esoteric scholarships. But if you sit through. I mean, there was, I was able to get a scholarship for a young man because his father was a Saudi Arabian citizen. And the Saudi government has all sorts of money available for foreign studies here if you can associate yourself through lineage to a Saudi citizen. There's also there's a very, very good graduate school scholarship given by the Rotary Club, Rotary International. It's a youth scholarship. You have to specialize in sort of some sort of diplomatic studies, but it will cover basically a master's degree.
There, in other words, there are a lot of very interesting, strange scholarships
right
out there. You have to go look for them, but you may be surprised what you qualify for.
I'm saying you can't imagine the esoteric nature of some of them, and then some are very, very obvious.
Yeah. Real quickly, Dave, I wanted to ask you this because we talk about cost of college, and so for a lot of people, it's, you know, they're looking for the better bang for their buck. But how about this? I mean, I was curious about, you know, the more elite schools and sometimes going, you know, to those you're talking about going up north. What does the data tell us about the value of investing in that more expensive schooling, you know, that more expensive education versus just going to staying home, staying at the local school, the state school, and keeping it cheap?
Well, that also is something that there's sort of this mythology that's arisen about this kind of stuff. Look, I went to, you know, an elite private college. I went to Brown University. However, my life really changed in, of all places, South Florida, because I went at night with electricians and cops to Palm Beach Community College to study Spanish. And that led to me being a foreign correspondent in Mexico and Bogota, and then later in other parts of Latin America. So you can get a fantastic education at a community college. You can get a fantastic education at a University of Florida or any other state school. But the money thing is really a little trickier than it seems. There are now a lot of private universities, very good nonprofit universities in this country, that will give you, if your family makes $160,000, $170,000, they'll basically kick in so you have no loans. You have all grants you don't pay back. So a private school can actually become cheaper, less expensive than a state university. On the other hand, state universities, you know, sometimes the quality is uneven in some of them, but there are some fantastic ones, and there are ones with honors programs, so you have special classes, you get to know professors, you even have special dorms. So nobody should discount the state universities for quality.
Yeah. We did collect some questions from our listeners, and some of them are high school students. We heard from Julia Cooper. She's a high school senior at Mast Academy, and she has concerns about her qualifications for college. Let's listen in.
My biggest concern with the college process is knowing exactly how qualified I am for certain programs or colleges, because I've been told that I am highly qualified for multiple schools, but due to the amount of other students that are also highly qualified, it would be somewhat of a reach school for me. So I was wondering how bigger schools are harder to get into versus smaller schools and what the benefits of that are.
All right. So she's looking at what, you know, what's going to be to her best advantage, the bigger schools, the smaller schools. Dave, I'll start with you on that one, actually.
Sure. Well, my book, Acceptance, looks at kids, you know, real kids in a real, you know, good but not a great public high school applying to colleges. And there, again, I want to be reassuring, and I'll do the same thing when I'm down there November 14th. It's not, you know, a lot of the schools are not out of reach when you think they are. And Miami kids, frankly, have a huge advantage. They're growing up so that, you know, by the time you're in high school, you know sort of where Port-au-Prince is, and you know where Caracas is, you know what's happening in Cartagena, and you're in a very, very mixed bunch of people in a very worldly, cosmopolitan city. And colleges like that. And so you can't plot on a piece of paper whether you can get into a place. There's some intangibles. But if you're curious, if you work hard, if you have if you're a leader in some club or some sport, or if you're involved in it, if you have any kind of passion, even if the passion might change, if you're good at engineering or writing or something, there are so many amazing colleges that are going to open their doors to you. So I really want to be careful of this. You know, counselors, less these days, but counselors used to say, well, you know, that's really out of your reach. You just don't know because they're intangibles. And maybe they're looking for a tuba player this year. Maybe they're looking for somebody who's a soccer goalie, whatever it may be. So my advice to kids is, you know, don't think of safety schools and things like that. Think of several, maybe half dozen schools. Look them up. Find out kind of what their general requirements are for SAT or ACT. And then apply to a range of those schools. And you will see that kids do phenomenally well when they do that.
All right. Thank you so much for that. I wanted to hear from one of our other students who sent in. This was about the applications process as well and extracurricular activities. We received this question from Robert DeLillo, a senior also at Mast Academy.
Hi, I'm Robert DeLillo. I live in Aventura, Florida, and I'm a senior at Mast Academy. How exactly colleges go about their admissions process is ambiguous from what I've seen and what I've experienced, and my primary concern is regarding the holistic review that colleges often reference. What exactly is taken into account in the holistic review?
All right, so what that holistic review, that the way colleges look at students? Octavio, I wanted to get a sense from you, like, you know, again, I hear from these last couple of students' comments and their questions, is that concern. You've heard this over and over again. It's like, but how are they really looking at me? What is it that they want to see? What does a college want to see?
Well, what you have to be above everything else is genuine. You cannot pretend to be a lover of the arts and an aficionado of ballet if the most cultural thing you've done is sit on the sidelines during a Dolphins game. I mean, you have to follow who you are. If and when a college a college representative conducts an interview or reviews your activities, you have to be genuine. So if your heart, you got to follow your calling. If your calling is you're going to be on the fencing team because you've always wanted, you know, you fell in love with Errol Flynn movies way back. I know I'm dating myself. Go to fencing. If you're cerebral and you like the chess club, if you like to read and, you know, you initiate a reading club, a mystery reading club, follow your heart and be genuine. The only thing you cannot do, and I'm sure my friends here will back me up on this, the only thing you cannot do is you cannot fake it. They will know, and you will come across as disingenuous and a phony.
So if you love something, then you better show that you love it. You're not just...
Follow your heart and be able to articulate why you like it.
Lou, this goes to the resume. And that's the thing I find really interesting. I think what I remember going to college was, what was my GPA? What was my SAT score? And here's my essay. But really, students need a resume now. Okay. And so this goes to what, you know, these students, and they're worried about what the universities are looking for. So how do you advise, especially those freshmen and sophomore, how do you build your resume for your senior year?
Right. Well, I'm very fortunate to be in a school, but many of our schools have so many wonderful activities and interest clubs and, of course, sports and things like that. From the time they get on campus with us as freshmen, we definitely encourage them to get as involved, to explore as many different areas, so that come the, you know, sophomore into junior year, they have something pretty solid. It might be, you know, one or two or two or three items, interests, clubs, or activities that they really feel strongly about.
I've known parents who, you know, they've got their kids in everything.
Poor
and it's
things.
Like, where's the time? But
yes.
I mean, is it
and then the classes?
Is it a couple of things? Is it just the
amount?
That's
what I tell the kids, two or three.
Two or three of the things that you're
something
really
that
into.
They really are into, that they can show they've spent a good amount of their extra time, if they have any of that, that they're committed to, that they have maybe built or grown with in some capacity, and that they feel very strongly about, and that they can show that in an interview or, again, on their resume, as you were saying, or in their essay. One bit of advice I heard and I really like to use often is not to worry so much about what you think the colleges want to hear, but what do you want them to know about you? And if you are trying to build a resume, you build that from the top with what you have spent your most time, after your GPA and all the numbers, the qualitative,
right,
what you have spent the most amount of your time or your energy or passion on, and that'll come through.
Let me finish with this, because we're short on time here. I want to ask all of you real briefly, is the piece of advice that you would give right now to parents and their kids as they're going through this process? And again, if they've got another year or two before they get to it, but what's the one thing you would say to them about how they should approach this process and try to make it a little more enjoyable than it being so stressful? Dave, I want to start with you.
Sure. I'll say one thing that I think, again, is reassuring. Rankings do not tell you the best college. In fact, there is no best college that someone can decide. It's the right college for you, for your personality, for your interests, for the kind of, whether you want, you know, rural place or an urban place, you want to be near home, or I always recommend going far from home. That is a decision you make by looking at the place or by going online and finding out about it, what you can do. But no, even though I worked for U.S. News and World Report and I liked it, they cannot tell you the best school for yourself. And again, I just want to mention, you know, Temple Israel of Greater Miami, we'll be talking about this the evening of Wednesday, November 14th, and it'll be very reassuring and sponsored by the Brown University Club. But I'm a big advocate of community colleges, too, as I said.
All right. Octavia, what about you? What's that one piece of advice?
This is a no-lose situation. You have the benefit of being in a country that boasts 61 out of the top 100 colleges and universities in the world. Like Dave said, 3,000 quality universities or colleges to choose from. There is no poor choice. I would say enjoy the process. Enjoy the research. Enjoy the interaction. Enjoy the travel. It's truly a blessing that you're going to enjoy.
Have fun with it, definitely. And Lou, what about you?
I couldn't agree more with what both of the gentlemen said about, you know, there's so many great opportunities out there. To definitely explore, familiarize yourself with the process as early as you can. And, you know, it's 9th, 10th grade, that's fine. Learn the lingo, get comfortable with it. And when the time comes, do all that you know that you can and should do. Get it done in a timely manner. And then let go and just let it be and trust in the process, because they will end up where they're meant to be able to move on to that next important part of their lives.
And I'll have to end it there. But if you still have a comment or question about this process, if you have a question about the application process, please find us on Facebook, WLRN Sundial, and post that question up there. We'll help you find the answers. Again, a great panel today. We heard from Coral Reef High School CAP advisor Lou Gilman, also Dr. Octavio Ramos, president of the Dr. O. Ramos and Associates Tutoring and College Prep Services, and Dave Marcus. He's the author of Acceptance, a legendary counselor helps 7 kids find the right colleges and find themselves. He's, by the way, joining us from NPR Studios in New York. He's going to be, as he said, in Miami at the Temple Israel of Greater Miami, November 14th, for a discussion about this process. Folks, I want to thank you so much. I really thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Still to come, we're going to learn about how the art of belly dancing is helping women deal with emotional wounds. That's next here on Sundial on WLRN.